Well, hello to you.
And you.
And you over there. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. This week, my friends, I have thermal management, embedded computing, SOSA, VPX, and volcanoes on my mind. So we best get started. So what if we could power an entire country with a volcano? And what if that volcano is deep underwater? Yes, folks, it's time for a little news you may have missed. Mega Plumes edition. Now, first off, I must say that I'm a bit of a volcano lover. Did you know that Portland is one of the only cities in the United States to have an extinct volcano within its city limits? And I grew up just down the street from said volcano. My mother's birthday is on the same day that Mount St. Helens blew her top, and I made an ill-fated volcano science experiment in the fourth grade. But who didn't? So, getting back to that power from underwater volcanoes business. So, before we can harness the immense power from these submarine volcanoes, we need to know a lot more about them. And that's exactly what a recent study from the University of Leeds was aiming to do with a set of remotely operated vehicles deep in the Northeast Pacific Ocean. Their research revealed a very interesting correlation between the creation of these large columns of powerful heated water rising from the ocean floor, called megaplumes, and the way ash is dispersed from these underwater volcanoes. So first, what makes these megaplumes so cool? Or hot, as the case may be. First is how big they are. The size of these mega plumes can have the volume of 40 million Olympic-sized swimming pools. Now, these mega plumes, they do act the same way as plumes do with regular land-based volcanoes. They carry ash with them as they spread upward and then outward. But sometimes the origins of these submarine mega plumes can be a bit murky. We know that their associated volcanoes are down there somewhere, but we weren't really sure where. Above all else, this team was looking to find how exactly these mega plumes are created. If we know how they are formed, then maybe we can harness that energy as well. Well, this team from the University of Leeds may have found the answer. These mega plumes are formed very quickly during the eruption of the lava. And how did they come up with this discovery? With a mathematical model, of course. And in order to create this model, they reconstructed the dynamics of an ash pattern that had been spread by a previous eruption. And they found that ash from these kind of volcanic eruptions can spread several miles from the volcano. Most importantly, they found that the rate of energy released that would be required to carry ash that far is equivalent to the power used by the entire United States. Yes. Another interesting aspect of this research that this team from the University of Leeds discovered is that, yes, these mega plumes are caused by underwater volcanic eruptions, but their release of energy is so fast that it cannot be due to the erupted molten lava alone. No, instead, this research shows that these underwater eruptions actually lead to the rapid emptying of hot fluids within the Earth's crust. When the magma heads upward toward the seafloor, hot fluid from those Earth crust reservoirs goes with it. Dr. David Ferguson from the University of Leeds School of Earth and Environment puts the research in perspective like this. He says, "The majority of the Earth's volcanic activity occurs underwater, mostly at depths of several kilometers in the deep ocean. But In contrast to terrestrial volcanoes, even detecting that an eruption has occurred on the seafloor is extremely challenging. Consequently, there remains much for scientists to learn about submarine volcanism and its effects on the marine environment. Wow. Now, if we could just get Aquaman on the case, all of our energy concerns would be complete. Am I right? Okay. So if you'd like more information about this study, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time to bring in Steve Goodnecht from LCR Embedded. We're talking all about VPX, SOSA, embedded computing, and more.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Amelia.
So today, Steve, we're talking about VPX, SOSA, and LCR. But before we get started, since it's been a while since you guys have been on my show, what is LCR Embedded Systems all about?
Well, first of all, we do appreciate you inviting us back and look forward to more engagements like this. So what is LCR about? I would say three things. First, in a nutshell, simply put, developing packaging for embedded systems, and primarily, really to no one's surprise, VPX and SOSA content. It has inundated our business, as I suspect it has inundated the industry. You know, one of our core capabilities, it turns out, is in designing for thermal management. And that's important when you think about the power requirements of some of these newer high-speed processing applications and the boards that make them happen. We're building a successful line of ATR chassis that I'll talk briefly about in a minute. Second point, our customers don't have time to wait. To no one's surprise, they don't mess around, and neither do we. So we believe in getting very quick initial responses to inquiries as they come in so that customers know whether or not, you know, we're right for the job or not. And then we follow up in short order with quality proposals that spells out, you know, not only what we can do, but what we can't do. We address the gotchas that we know are out there and try to stay one step ahead of our customers. We try to think about the things that our customers may not be thinking about, and they appreciate that because it basically makes them feel like we have their back, and we do. And then at the end of all that, we deliver products that perform as required. So we take those two points together. Our sales and engineering and program management staff are, in my opinion, second to none in the industry. You know, we're a small company, but we're gaining some traction and we're turning some heads. Our staff are, it sounds cliche, but they're courteous and professional, and they are collaborative. They work with our customers like the equals that they are. They enjoy what they do. Our customers feel that. And frankly, at the end of the day, our customers simply like working with us.
That's great. So, Steve, let's dig into VPX. What do you see are the biggest challenges associated with VPX, and how are you guys keeping up with these issues?
Well, you know, VPX and now the SOSA initiative on top of that are really heating things up, and I'll say that both literally and figuratively. But I think the success of VPX overall, coupled with surging demand that we see and that I'm sure our competitors see across the board, means that uptake for the architecture is moving rapidly, to say the least. You know, the refinements the SOSA brings in terms of reducing integration time, in terms of challenges, that reduced integration time for the electronics of it sets the expectations that the whole development to deployment timeline can go faster. And that's a reasonable expectation. I mean, that is one of the key points of SOSA. So that trickles down to the packaging designers and everybody else in the supply chain. So that means keeping up with the new pace and the new expectation is one of our challenges. So we address that by modular mechanical designs for our chassis and design commonality as far as possible. That helps us reduce our design time to keep pace. You know, you don't want to design from the ground up for every system, and intelligent modularity really helps avoid that. So we're introducing what we call our AOC line. That stands for air over conduction cooling. It's a line of ATR style chassis, and it's an example of a baseline design that's extensible to go anywhere from one up to the most we've done is 18 cards, but it's an extensible design. We leverage each new design with the previous design, and that helps speed our design cycle. We maintain close coupling with our suppliers, and that's really important, especially, you know, we're seeing some supply chain interruptions with COVID currently. We buy ahead long lead items, so that helps move things along. And also early on in these engagements, you know, we're talking about highly technical, complex systems, obviously, in our industry. So a lot of time is spent early on in the buying process trying to determine the important design details of what's needed. That's not technically lead time, but it can add to the overall purchase cycle lengthy. It's important to get those details correct. So we make a concerted effort to be as efficient as and as speedy as possible in the early stages of the engagement to make sure that no time is wasted. And when I say things are literally heating up, I'm referring, of course, to the heat dissipation in these systems. And packaging suppliers really need to continue to find ways to maintain safe operating temperatures for when you consider individual 3U modules that push past, let's say, 270 plus watts of dissipated power, and systems that can easily average over 125 watts per slot or more. You've got to really be on top of that in terms of being a packaging supplier. So what are we doing about that? LCR has developed a well-deserved reputation in the industry as being pretty successful in air and liquid cooling for better heat dissipation in systems based on specifically Vita 48.2 conduction cooled modules. And I mentioned 48.2 because they're ubiquitous in the industry. The vast majority of new VPX and SOSA modules available or on the drawing board today are Vita 48.2 conduction cooled modules. So that's important because stretching the heat dissipation in those systems enables our customers to stay with Vita 48.2 modules. And in so doing, they maintain access to the huge availability of functional choices.
So, Steve, what about SOSA in particular? How do you see SOSA playing a role in the evolution of VPX and LCR in particular?
It's interesting to follow the whole evolution of VPX to OpenVPX and now SOSA. VPX had kind of a rocky start. Everyone's kind of aware of that. OpenVPX smoothed things over a little bit in terms of, you know, bringing in, managing the standard. And SOSA has really done an extremely great job in defining the standard, and it's going to see continued widespread uptake. It has really done a good job in reining in the standard. Folks, they know what to do in terms of module design. So those improvements that SOSA represents really make it the baseline architecture for defense applications, and it probably will be for decades. If VME is any example, VPX will live as long as VME. I mean, if you think about what SOSA brings to the table, reduced development cycle time and reduced costs, reduced integration time, multi-vendor choice, reduced sustainment costs, modernization costs, easier capability in terms of evolutionary upgrades, obsolescence mitigation. If you couple all those improvements, and then you consider the DoD, the legendary DoD mandate that thou shalt incorporate SOSA into new programs, it's difficult not to get excited, quite frankly, about SOSA and the future of VPX. So as a result, we're excited at LCR. Let's say that we're happily positioned to be, as we speak, providing chassis, backplanes, and integration services to multiple new and existing DoD programs. And we're building a following one engagement at a time. We work closely with some of the leading SOSA and OpenVPX module suppliers in the industry. We don't have our own in-house line of modules. And that's kind of typical of many packaging suppliers like LCR. But we work very closely with what we refer to as a best-in-class partner ecosystem, provide the packaging that follows suit and gets the application done.
So I have heard a lot about 3U VPX versus 6U. VPX. What do you see as the future, and especially from LCR's point of view?
Well, if our experience is any indication, 3U VPX is the king of the hill. You know, we entertained far more 3U VPX inquiries versus 6U, probably 10 to 1. And that's really no surprise. I think that'll continue because I like to put it in terms of functionality per unit area. If you think of 3U VPX as being much more capable in terms of that measurement, functionality per unit area, power consumption, the overall sizing of the board, all manner of swap considerations, size, weight, and power considerations, 3U seems really to have exactly what it takes for most current applications. We just rarely get a knock on the door for 6U, but you know, the good news is, and this also pertains, goes back to the success of the folks in SOSA, that with really few exceptions, the integration requirements, the integration methodology, the design methodology for 3U VPX packaging really translates well into 6U designs. And so, you know, as 6U systems find homes, and they eventually will, it may not be as widespread as 3U, but they eventually will find homes, packaging suppliers like LCR will be ready.
Excellent. All right, Steve, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, since we've been dealing with a bit of a lockdown, it seems forever these days, if you could have one food right now, doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, you need a passport to get there, what would you have?
Well, that's a good question. My wife and I visited Ireland about 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember we were sitting in this wonderful little Irish pub. It was a cold September early evening. And I had a nice pint of Guinness probably in front of me. And the best macaroni and cheese with ham infused throughout that I could imagine. And I said to my wife, you know, this is heaven on earth. So when I think about a meal that I would like to have right now, breaking out of our COVID confines and going to a restaurant, and enjoying a meal, that's where my mind drifts back to.
And Steve, that sounds absolutely amazing. I would go there in a second. Yeah. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Steve.
You're very welcome, Amelia. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all sorts of fun techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, oh yeah, me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please give us a review on the platform of your choice. And if you want more information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, I promise I will respond. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 29th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.